Our next presenter is Wayne Beekman. As I mentioned earlier in my presenter introductions, Wayne Beekman is co-founder of Information Concepts. Wayne, welcome, and thank you for your patience as we move into your presentation. So it's all yours.
Great. Thanks a lot, John, and thanks, Chris, for putting together such a good technical overview and dealing. I really like the discussion on the objections, and don't worry, I'm going to steal it next time I'm in front of a customer. What this presentation is about is really very different, hopefully, from traditional Microsoft technology updates. What I'd like to kind of talk to you about is my personal journey with cloud computing, and give you a little background on how as a company I've adopted it. Let me give you a little background on myself. My name is Wayne Beekman. In 1982, I started the Information Concepts, and we're a 100% app dev shop. We don't do any infrastructure work. We don't do network support. It's 100% application development. And within that, we've developed a nice model for fixed-priced application development. I started only 2 years this spring was a dedicated cloud computing practice. And with this, hopefully this presentation will kind of talk a little bit about why I created the practice and what I've found over the last couple of years. So for today, we're going to break down how we as a company define cloud computing for executives. So Chris's discussion was excellent in terms about instances and scaling up and scaling out. But I found that when I started talking to executives from a technical perspective, they kind of glazed over. So I kind of came up with a different way to approach it in terms of the discussion. And then mapping the specific offerings to different opportunities as a professional services firm or what we can do to help. And then I just have a little slide on different workloads at work, and I think Chris touched on some, and I have some more to talk about. Oh, there it is. So, as you saw, thanks for the comments on the Azure Academy and my Twitter account there. In terms of, I put together a quick, I have a couple of surveys on this, just to kind of, one, make sure that you're all still awake after a nice, depending on where, if you're on the East Coast and you've brought in lunch for your presentations. Here's a little discussion. I'd just like to, you know, how you guys feel about it. I know that from the initial discussion, about half of you were looking at it for the first time. What's your gut feel? And this is not a technical discussion, but if someone came up to you at a cocktail party and said, how do you feel about this Microsoft stuff? Well, how do you think you would answer it? And I think hopefully the only way to kind of move down the chain with this is really to understand it over time and to start doing internal proof of concepts. So I'm glad it's honest. I'll give you guys, it's really, let's say, perfect, the perfect curve there in terms of folks on both sides. And what the interesting thing is a lot of folks are okay with it, but don't appear to be holding, or kind of seem to be holding back. So in terms of our kind of the Information Concepts journey, let me just tell you a little bit about why, how this happened, and what really caused me to change the direction of my business. About 2 years ago this spring, I had a blog post of a Microsoft employee. And the blog post was a pointer to something that was released at Google. It was called Google App Engine. I know a lot of you are familiar with Google Docs and Google Apps and the issues with Microsoft addressing that and their BPOS offerings. But the Google App Engine was very different. It was to build code, not in .NET, but in open source type environments, and to be able to deploy it on a platform, an application fabric, as Chris identified for with Azure, and be able to deploy it without any capital expenditures. And I looked at that and said, you know, as an application development firm, when I deal with customers, especially on the beginning of a project and we're trying to turn into production, what's the biggest problem? The biggest problem is working with operations, working with enterprise ops, making sure that we've procured and configured and provisioned hardware properly for a job. And the thought of being able to walk into a customer and say, we can build something for you, and then I can deploy it in a matter of hours, and it will scale on demand, was something, as someone who's been in the business for almost 30 years, so, you know, this really does change everything. I know I really hate the term paradigm shift, but this is really a paradigm shift in as an application development shop and how we have to think about our business. My only concern about this when I saw the Google App Engine hosting was this is all about open source, and I have a .NET shop. And in fact, that's what the end of the post said is, I wonder how Microsoft is going to react to that. Now we're here about a year and a half later from that post, and it really does, we do now have a nice strong story in terms of bringing our .NET developers into the cloud-based development space. So when we look at the cloud computing offerings out there and I start to talk to customers, you really kind of get two senses. One, the folks that are saying, I'm not interested. They kind of, you know, it's all they use security and traditionally security and SLA and not in my data. You know, my data has to stay in my data center. And other folks are just saying, you know, I understand it. How do I adopt it? This I'm going to take you through the last 2 years of my discussions with customers. This has changed dramatically in the last year. Where at first folks are just saying this is just not interesting to us. It's a lot of noise, and now folks are saying, I need to get there and help me get there. So it's allowed us to have a very strategic discussion with our customers. Okay, the next slide. I'm having a little problem here. Thank you. Oh, okay. So when we came out of, I think we're double clicking. I think I got control again. Thank you. So what I did was, after the initial announcement of Google App Engine, looking at the Microsoft offerings, what Amazon was doing, Google, and I know that as partners we're asked about different platforms, what I did was I hired a dedicated practice manager to go to our traditional commercial customers and say, we need to start to educate our customers about how to take advantage of cloud-based offerings. And then we went out, visited our commercial customers, and basically just had discussions about cloud computing, and it was really education. For the first year, I was doing education at the executive level and then at the development level and the team levels within our practice. So here's a question. If you walk today into a CIO's office, I saw most of you are architects and developers on the presentation here, but and you know, so the sales guy brings you to a meeting and you're talking about a solution, what chance are looking today about what probability you would bring it? Right now we as a firm, and we'll talk about how we approach it, but we bring a cloud-based development in Azure as an alternative solution, and from the folks that are and then deal with it. Some folks will immediately say no. Some will say they want to learn more. So let me see. I still have countdown here. And we're going to kind of reset this discussion, revisit this in a little bit. So I'm going to, I see where we're at. I'll tell you we're about most good distribution with 40 or so percent in the 20% range and everything else for undistributed. So let's kind of talk about why, what happens when you have that discussion with a customer. So when we have a discussion with a customer, when we walk in and we talk about it, the question is why invest? Now, in order to do this, there's presentations like Chris has done, and certainly internally you need to dedicate some resources to take some applications that you have. I know, as I saw, most of you are architects and developers. I know that you have some code on your desktop, but the question is it really worth investing that evening or weekend to set up an account and move some code in or build a new front end, some existing web services that you might have in your office? But what I found is that it allowed me to start to have a strategic discussion with my customer. It just wasn't about the application at hand, but how they thought about computing in general. There's a, I don't have the reference, the link to it here. It is, I have the link to it on my Twitter site under W. Beekman. I forgot the link in the presentation. But Gartner recently came out and said that 20% of all companies by 2012 will have zero IT resources, which is just a striking discussion. I don't know, and again, I don't know if the reality is 20%, if it's 10% or 30%. I don't know if 2012 is really 2015. But if they're starting, if Gartner's getting this feedback from enterprises saying, you know, my competitive advantage is our business functions and how we run as a company, not my competitive advantage is not having a data center. So it allows me to have this discussion with the customer about strategic direction. The other thing that this does is gives me an alternative. As I said, I've been a fixed price application development shop for almost 30 years. That has always been a great differentiator for me. I don't know about you guys, but when I walk in and a customer says, how much is it going to cost? I have a process, I have a methodology to plan a project on a fixed price and deliver on a fixed price. And they're very comfortable with that. It's a great solution to a pain point that we've had for a long time with runaway projects. I now have another solution set to bring to them. I can help you build and deliver a system, and it's not going to increase your capital expenditures. So it brings us a new solution. And for folks that have built services around different packaged offerings, a lot of application development shops have hybrid solutions. This allows you to expand your offering set and provide you a competitive advantage. Chris did a good overview of infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and application as a service. This has really been this picture here with the stacks has really been my key in terms of the way I educate folks about it. I've been in situations before I put up this picture for folks where I would talk for a half hour with a customer about all the different options in cloud-based development, all the really exciting things we can do about building scalable applications. And the CIO would just shake his hand and say, you know, I just want to get rid of Exchange. How do we get that out of there? Or, oh, I have a storage problem. How do I get rid of that? And what I found was that talking about cloud-based computing in high level, or talking about Azure at a high level, didn't allow the conversation to be focused on the workloads that were important to the customer. So what I did is came up with this slide to kind of discuss what happens with infrastructure development and application. And then you'll see on the left side is the traditional on-premise solution where you own everything, hardware, operating system, database, code, and your application, and you have to manage everything. Infrastructure as a service, which is really today is not has been announced as part of a future VMworld within Azure, but is supported by today by Amazon in terms of their EC2 offerings, or just internally if you have hosting shops that have virtualization. Nobody knows what the hardware is, but as a firm, you're managing the operating system, the web, the database, the code, and the application. If we go all the way to the left, excuse me, to the right, to the application service, I'm sure all of you have used some sort of application service, whether it's Hotmail or Amazon's bookstore. You don't know what the code is written in. You don't know about database, and you don't even care. You just want to know that this application is served. In terms of the cloud computing space, the application service, a pretty well-known model. It's well-known as subscription model. And what as application development shops, we really focus on infrastructure and development. If we map this to Microsoft's offerings, we'll see that Azure is really a solution for the development platform as a service. And Chris has done a good job of breaking out some of the capabilities, and I'll drill down a little more. But in terms of SQL and web front ends, having the fabric to scale an application is all within the Azure space. If we start talking about applications as a service within the Microsoft offerings, it's really the BPaaS offerings. These are not, to be able to take their Exchange, SharePoint, the collaboration presence, and send that out at, X dollars per month per user. So, and then if we look over on the left, the third party support currently, Azure has announced a VM role, but eventually that will be available so that you can move existing workloads, existing cost packages into an Azure space and be able to manage it. But for the purposes of this discussion, we're really going to focus on that second stack, which is the Azure as a service, the development platform as a service. So trying to summarize it, when we talk about the platform, if an infrastructure service, you're bringing the stack, you're bringing everything, including patch management, which version of the operating system, the database, which version of IIS are you going to run, how do you configure it. With on the bottom, if we look at applications, just bring the users, turn them on, they run. But what's exciting is if we have a development platform for ourselves, we can just bring our developers to a platform. They can write the code, not worry about patch management, not worry about what version of operating system, have confidence and trust at the set of APIs that are going to do what they need to do, that it's going to scale the way they want it to scale. And then we worry about what we've really been trained to worry about, which is building an application to meet a business's needs. So I think this picture might look very familiar to all of you on this in this session. We've all been in meetings, right? We're about to develop we're about to roll out an application. We've done the design. We've started to do the development. And then our customer says, so what type of hardware are we going to need to roll out this application? And you sit in the room, and there are the network guys, and there are the security guys, and the dev guys. And the dev guys go, I don't know. You know, we're expecting the businesses would have between 5 and 10,000 users. So what happens? The networking guys say, okay, well, if that's the case, we need to have a lot of web servers. We need to put in the load balancing routers. We need to up our connection, our bandwidth to the internet, or maybe with our hosting site, we need to commit to more devices. And then they start building this out. And as Chris did a great job of with his slide showing, if we build it out for n number of users and there are n minus one users that come to the site, we've over procured. And if there's n plus one users, we've underserved. I had a financial services organization I went to years ago that had a lot of hardware in their data center, and they said that they need to build out their compute power to support the first day of trading for any calendar year. And after that, everything was less. So you can imagine an organization that built out probably tens of millions of dollars worth of new hardware every year to deal with one trading day. If we can architect an application where all they had to do was spin up the right number of instances and servers to support that day or that week and then be able to drill down, think of the economies and the cost savings to that organization. And not only that, think about the stress for 360 days of planning for those 5 days that you don't need. So the question is, You can't get off. I mean, there are a lot of folks on this presentation today. We're not going to hang up and go into our customers and say, you know something? We're going to flip the switch and everything we do now is going to be in the cloud. It's not going to work. So what I'd like to propose to you is kind of an alternative baseline architecture to start to talk to customers about. And what I'm about to show you is a lot of good, has gotten a lot of good feedback from my customers when I've talked about it, which is, what is a first step? What's really the competitive advantage to the organization? The data and the business rules. Everything else is access to the data and the business rules. So what if we instead created a hybrid model where we took the web front end, we took advantage of Azure storage, and then connected it back to my existing business rules. That would be in back of my data center, whether it's hosted or on-premise or hosted. And what you find is that this hybrid model is a baby step model really speaks to organizations in terms of risk management, so that they can save dollars day one by not deploying existing hardware, but they get the comfort. There are a lot of questions I saw that came in about the comfort, about security. If we continue to use existing business rules and existing database models internally, it allows folks to be more comfortable. So this is what one of the things that I did early on was talk to folks about hybrid models, which is really the foundation of the of Microsoft's software plus services. This is just kind of a way to kind of visualize software plus services in terms of our customers. So when I went out to the customers, as I mentioned, we really did a lot of proof of concepts internally. I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of just background understanding what cloud computing was about and what architectures look like. And this is, again, the second year of discussions I've had with clients. The interesting thing is the first year was all about fear. It was all about, I think in the article when I was interviewed, they said, what are the top three things the customers want to talk about or are they concerned about? And it was security, SLA. And that was it. Because although Microsoft has done a great job in coming up with an SLA story, most of the other companies that I talked about did not have as clear SLAs in their offerings. And security is a very difficult discussion to have. What I usually do in a discussion of security is I ask about the specific transaction. What specifically are they concerned about security? And then we address each one specifically. Because if not, they'll just take a big security hammer and hit it over your head. The second year started about this summer when I started having meetings. The discussions changed. The customers weren't concerned about, the objections weren't security and SLA. The concerns were, I really want to start this, but I have existing depreciation on my hardware. I have operational procedures in my data center, and I don't want to have two sets of operational procedures. I want to have one. I don't want to have, I've already spent money on a huge storage array. I got to use it. So it was really a change in mindset, and this is probably in sync with what Gartner heard when they asked their customers where they got the 20% of folks want to get rid of their machines or any IT resources. It's what I'm starting to hear, which is the fears are being put to the side, and now we're just having a discussion as to how do we get there. The other thing that was interesting is once I discussed the problem, discussed the stacks, infrastructure, platform, and applications, I was able to come up with specific projects for each. We had one organization with a CIO just came back from a Gartner conference, talked about cloud computing, and the only reason he offered to even talk to us was because we did work with him a few years back. And he said, you know, this is just not for us. After breaking it down into infrastructure, platform, and applications, we broke off into three separate projects. One to talk about disaster recovery and using infrastructure as service and how I could build a disaster recovery plan for his existing applications. The second was to educate and help their developers to take advantage of it. And the third was how to get rid of Exchange and move it to BPOS. So all of those projects came out of one discussion. And I think what's happened over the last year is that we're out of the education business and now we're into more identifying proof of concepts with our customers. And so when we talk about building the scalable web applications, and then Chris kind of went into this, so I'll just quickly go through it, is it's the SDK is there for you. All you're worrying about is your code, have an operational dashboard in order to control it, and be able to do the instrumentation to scale on demand. And that's what your developers worry about. They don't have to worry about the underlying environment. And when we talk about infrastructure, same thing. We're not worrying about the hardware, but we do need to understand what the operating system is. And I think for the purposes of this discussion, it's very important for as solution architects to understand what makes sense in terms of what Azure does and where you would need to use infrastructure service. I've had organizations that have been interested, but they have a third-party set of COTS products that they want to get out of their data center, but they want to extend them with new development. So we're basically building composite applications with vestibule components. The composite applications take advantage of Azure Storage, SQL, and then talk to their existing existing COTS products that are on a VM type infrastructure solution. And it still allows them to get this out of their data center. So, and again, as Chris mentioned, in developing with Azure, the one great thing about this is that we all of us on this call have .NET developers in our shop. The one great thing about .NET is that it's really one .NET environment through Visual Studio. If you're developing for data centers or if you're developing an application to be put on a real-time board that might go in a piece of equipment, .NET, to some degree, the learning curve is very, once you're a .NET developer, being able to move up or down the chain is just a different set of APIs. What we're really saying is, now, those same .NET development resources can be building instantly scalable web-based applications deployed with cloud-based resources. There's a little education that you need for your development to understand how to use the queues, how to use the tables, how to use SQL, have blobs a little differently. But that's defined, that's why as IT architects, it's our job to make sure that we know how to architect solutions. I think at some point with the reason I've been so passionate about developing cloud-based solutions is that as an IT architect, if we don't bring these solutions up to our customers, then we're not doing them a service. We have to understand what their competitive advantage is to their organization, how to maximize it. The other part to that is let's kind of think about what's going to happen in 3 years when the kids that are in college right now are working on development platforms. They're used to developing in areas like Facebook applications and developing on hosted sites. They don't have hardware stacks in their dorm room to work on this stuff. So as these kids come into the workplace, they're going to talk about building applications to deploy to large cloud-based resources. And as it's our responsibility to really understand it and be able to take advantage of it. I wouldn't want to walk in 3 years from now, I wouldn't want to walk into a CIO and say they need to spend $500,000 worth of new hardware to deploy an application and have a kid who just started saying, I can deploy that over a weekend for free. So it's really important for us to understand it and understand the trade-offs. As Chris mentioned, when I look at Azure, I really look at it as a series of services, Azure SQL, queues, storage. What's really interesting that as you learn about the different components of Azure, there are some components that just have really strong, compelling stories. For example, Azure Storage, as Chris mentioned, they're going to come out with a drive-based solution. When you write something to Azure Storage, it's written to three places at once. So the concept of backup, if customers say, what about backup? Well, there really isn't backup because it's automated. The fabric actually provides that replication out for you. The other neat thing about Azure Storage is that the files can be accessed through Content Delivery Network using what Microsoft built out for the Olympics is part of the Azure Storage. So the need for a lot of your customers to use proprietary services like Akamai kind of go away. We have customers that have very large bandwidth needs, and by using Azure Storage, it goes away. And I think the real discussion now is there is really kind of we're getting to the point where there's a new normal. We really think about scaling up. And applications, we'll just buy more hardware. As Chris mentioned, you can certainly scale up Azure. But I think the real architectural interest comes when you start to build applications that can scale out so that your granularity of your solution can scale up, can scale out to meet your customers' needs and be able to control it. And as I mentioned, we don't have to just go 100%. We're only going to use Azure. We're not going to use anything on-premise. The concept is to use best-of-breed components to build these composite applications. And by doing that, by commingling on-premise and off-premise, you're really maximizing the ROI within the project. Last couple slides, just what I want to do is kind of give you a couple of types of workloads that we've seen that work really well in this space. I've kind of broken it up into three: forklifting applications, which is just kind of picking things up and moving them over. Really data center on demand. We've seen a lot of interest in disaster recovery. There's no reason for organizations to commit to a cage under a mountain with a whole bunch of servers if they're really not needed. So how do we use cloud-based resources kind of as that backup? And I think Chris mentioned a scenario with Kelly's Blue Book that was similar. The other is transaction-based applications, things that are spiky. You can use, and if, even if customers aren't comfortable with keeping their data out there, you can use cloud storage for static lookups, caching during the transaction, and then once the transaction is complete, you can put the data in a queue and drop it back for your on-premise data center to process it. And the other workload that I've seen a lot of customers interested in is for content distribution. I think Azure Storage, as a solution itself, has incredible uses in the enterprise. And when we talk to customers, commingling on-premise use of Azure Storage and web-based use to be able to take advantage of bandwidth management and having content delivery network and cutting out the costs of proprietary solutions is a really compelling story and very interesting to what my customers want to hear. So how do we start all this? So the first thing to do is you've got to learn a little bit about it. Extend sessions like this, and there's nothing better than just spending an afternoon and downloading the SDK and putting up the first Hello World application and be able to just start a dialogue. As Chris mentioned, it's just a quick discussion about it and learn what the customer's fears are, how you can help the competitive advantage of that organization. There's no longer need to have a huge data center to have your competitive advantage. Basically, Azure is your data center to support that. So, hopefully I just wanted to kind of revisit, based on my kind of journey, and what percentage, what's the probability that you would bring up Azure when you talk to a CIO in the solution. And also see how many are still awake after that last half hour of my ramblings. So I'll give you a couple more minutes. I think we've kind of moved, I think we've moved about an average of about 20% down the chain. So I think that's exciting. You'll find when you talk to your customers that they want to talk about it. They've been so bombarded with messaging about it that they really just want to sit down and talk about it. And I've had a lot of really exciting one-on-one discussions with CIOs as they say, I just need to understand how I can start to take advantage of it. Great. So any final questions, please let me know. Just submit on top.
Wayne, we do have a couple questions in the queue, and we'll go to an open mic briefly in a few minutes here. A couple questions in the queue are, does Azure take care of business-to-business and application-to-application on interoperable standards? I'm sorry, I think I said Chris or Wayne. Do you have any comment on that directly?
You know, if I was to be asked about that question independent of Azure, what would we talk about? We would probably talk about, especially in a business scenario, having web services and be able to have defined web services that I can architect solutions to talk to my partners. What this allows me to do is to host those web services in Azure, and actually provides a great platform for that.
And not only that, though, it also supplies a great security platform for that as well, because with the Windows Access Control Service, you can go in and you can control who has access to specific messages that are going to be delivered through that service as well. And of course, the scaling story is there. If you have a service that is going to be, that you're anticipating being used by many users, you can scale your services just as easily as you can scale any application as well.
Okay, very good. We do have one other question. I will ask for clarity on that question when we open up the mic in a minute here. So why don't we just go ahead and move to the next slide. That's great.
There you go.
All right. Well, hey, with that, what I do want to say is thank you both to Chris and Wayne for a great presentation. This is really kind of a novel approach that I've taken here. This is partners talking to partners. Every day Our partners are out there in the trenches, really coming across the tough questions, dealing with the big issues of today. And I thought there would be no better audience to speak with than our partners today to bring some of their shared learnings to you. So I hope you found that as a benefit. With that, the key takeaway here is that we can, you know, clearly say that, you know, Azure is as I see it, it's the fifth generation platform. And if I can get our slide to advance here a little bit. It's the fifth generation of computing. You know, it's clearly here to stay. And let me back up one more time. But more importantly, it offers net new business ideas and opportunities that allow you to leverage your investment in our technology platform today. So you've got a lot of .NET developers within your company today. Azure is a logical next step for them. This is the direction of the industry. As Wayne mentioned, we do see this as a paradigm shift in the way we're approaching our problems today in our customers' business. So I think it's going to be an important arsenal in your business moving forward. So with that in mind, I'll continue to focus on this and try to bring more value to you going forward. So lastly, I have one final set of questions myself to help direct me and where you want to go next, where you want to see more information, more content. I know one of the prevailing themes out of this was security. I saw a question on HIPAA compliancy, obviously, confidentiality of data. I have those as takeaways to basically do some additional research and come away with. But if you look down on your live meeting session, right in the middle of your session at the bottom of your screen, you'll see a capital A and a small A. If you want, please share with me some additional areas of interest for you. If you click on that and begin typing on the whiteboard, we'd like to capture some of your additional feedback. So let's take a minute to do that. Remember, center of your live meeting session, bottom of the screen, capital A, lowercase a, click on that and begin typing in on the whiteboard some of the areas that you'd like additional feedback. Any others? It's a great opportunity. I'll be really focusing hard. This will probably help influence and drive my direction going forward in the spring, where I'll come up and down the East Coast and visit a few more cities and bring additional information to our partners in person, and then we'll turn around and do a live meeting just like this for you as well. Excellent. Very good. Give it another 15 seconds here. Any more? Awesome. Great stuff. And if you don't get your answer typed in here, you can certainly send me an email at john.mcclellan@microsoft.com. My name is on the slide deck that you'll be downloading, and that we'll post in the future. So, okay, Michael, I think at this point I'll turn it over to you to sort of take control, and you let me know when you have got a snapshot of this screen so that we can follow up on it later.
Okay, we're good. Thank you very much, John, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your feedback on this whiteboard. So before we get to a final Q&A session with all of our presenters here, we would like to get your feedback on a survey that we have for you. Your feedback is very valuable to us. So please do fill this out before you log out, and just remember to click the Done button when you are finished with the survey today. And first of all, I'd just like to remind you, you can enter a text question to any of our presenters today by using the Q&A tool in Live Meeting. Just pop that open from the top left toolbar if you don't see it currently in your Live Meeting view. And as I mentioned at the beginning, for those of you on the toll-free attendee phone line, you do have the option to ask a live question. The way that works is you simply hit *8, just press *8 on your phone. That will let me know that you have a live question request, and then we can put you through one at a time. And once again, that the toll-free attendee phone line is at 1-800-813-9612, and you'll want to use pin code 6529, and once again, you can refer to your invitation for that information as well. And John, at this time, I don't have any live question requests, but I'll let you know once we do.
All right. Feel free to jump in now, ask your questions. Chris and Wayne are here to help provide some answers along with myself. So take a moment now if you want to type it into the Q&A box, or if you would like to do as Michael indicated using the phone, feel free to ask a question.
And while we're waiting for those, I would just like to remind our attendees, as we said at the beginning, you can access all of the content in today's session by clicking on the handouts icon that's in the upper right corner of Live Meeting and resembles three white sheets of paper. If you pop that open, you can access all the content in PowerPoint or PDF, and there's some supplemental content as well.
I think we have a question. Okay, let's see. How do you differentiate Azure and cloud computing? Wayne or Chris,
sure.
Can you take a stab at that?
I think when we talk about the different flavors of cloud computing, there's platform as a service, infrastructure as a service, and application as a service. And Azure supports development platform as a service. When we talk about something like moving Exchange from on-presence to off-premise, that's really the BPaaS offering of Microsoft for cloud computing for applications. Azure is the solution for application development, part of cloud computing within the Microsoft space.
Good. Chris, any thoughts on that?
Sorry, guys, I dropped off the call there.
The question was, how do you differentiate Azure and cloud computing, in your words?
So Azure is cloud computing. If you take a look at the definition of cloud computing, in effect, you are running applications off-premise. One of the interesting things, if you take a look around at companies like Rackspace and Mozo and so many others, they basically are doing the exact same thing. Their business has not changed, but now that the word cloud computing has come into our lexicon, you're finding that all of these companies that were hosting services before have now just attached cloud computing to their names in some way. That's not inaccurate, because it is just a way of having your application hosted off-premise. Now, just having your application hosted in Rackspace or something like that doesn't provide you with the capabilities that Azure does, because Azure is platform as a service, and what we're talking about there is it provides you with a complete file system, it provides you with complete infrastructure and everything else. So it's on a much larger scale.
Very good. Thanks. Excellent answer, both of you guys. Thank you very much. Michael, any other questions?
I don't have any live question requests at this time.
All right. I think we're about 3 minutes over, so I think it's a good time to stop. Our contact information is in the PowerPoint. Feel free to reach out to me if you'd like to as your primary point of contact, and I'll try to get the questions that you submit to me answered. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Thank you, Chris and Wayne, for taking the time out of your day to provide great insight on cloud computing for the partners in the Microsoft Partner Program. So thank you, and thank you, Michael, for facilitating this.
Thank you, John, Chris, and Wayne, for presenting today's webcast. I'd like to remind our partners in attendance that they can access this webcast recording via the Partner Learning Center within approximately 48 hours. Any internal Microsoft attendees may access it at academymobile.microsoft.com/WAC Academy Live. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's Partner Academy Live webcast. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect.